Chapter 25. Dreyfus was leaving the sleep lab when his bracelet chimed. It was Sparva.
"Think you need to drop by the nose, boss. Caught a couple of fish trying to swim away."
"Thank you," Dreyfus said, glad that he'd taken the initiative to have Sparva shadowed Chen and Saavedra. "I'll be there immediately." Sparva had detained them in the docking bay that formed the nose of Panoply's pumpkin face, the bay that handled cutters and corvettes, as opposed to civilian vehicles or deep-system cruisers. As field prefects, the Firebrand operatives were regular users of both light and medium enforcement vehicles, and would have been familiar faces to the technical staff manning the bay. Although they did not have clearance to take a ship, they had managed to talk their way aboard a cutter that had just come in for refueling and rearmament, and had been well advanced in pre-flight checks when Sparva blocked their escape by closing the main bay doors. Dreyfus would have to reprimand the staff who had allowed the prefects aboard the ship without the right clearance, but for now his only concern was extracting information from the two unsuccessful fugitives. They were still aboard the cutter, the ship still poised on its launching rack, with the doors blocking its egress. "I had a hard time tailing them," Sparva said, floating next to the cutter's suit wall, inside the air-filled connecting tube. Two internal prefects flanked him, whip-hounds drawn. For run-of-the-mill fields, these two knew a few tricks. "They're not exactly field prefects," Dreyfus said. "That's just an operational cover for what they really do. They're specialists, assigned to a super-black cell called Firebrand. Jane pulled the plug on the cell, but the cell had other ideas. They've been carrying on without her authority for 9 years."
"Now that's just naughty."
"Naughtier than you think. Firebrand has to take some of the responsibility for what happened to Ruskin Sartorius." Dreyfus unclipped his whiphound and motioned for Sparva to do likewise. "Let's get them off the vehicle. We can't keep these bay doors closed forever." They set the password to yield and entered, Dreyfus leading with Sparva just to his rear. Dreyfus sealed the password behind them, with the internals keeping guard on the other side so that there was no possibility of the Firebrand agents escaping back into Panoply. Like all cutters, it was a small vehicle with a limited number of hiding places. It was powered, but the cabin illumination was dimmed almost to darkness. Dreyfus fumbled in his pocket for his glasses, but he'd left them in his room before he went to the refectory. He called into the cutter's depths.
"This is Tom Dreyfus. You both know me by reputation. You're not going anywhere, so let's talk civilly."
There was no answer.
Dreyfus tried again. "You don't have anything to fear from me. I know about Firebrand. I know about your operational mandate. I understand that you did what you did because you thought you were doing the right thing by Panoply."
Again there was no reply. Dreyfus glanced back at Sparva, then pushed further into the ship, in the direction of the flight deck. He made out the watery blue glow of instrumentation seeping around the corner of the bulkhead that separated the flight deck from the adjoining compartment.
"I haven't come to punish you for the consequences of any actions you may have taken that you believe to be in the best interests of the band."
Dreyfus paused heavily.
"But I do need to know the facts. I know that Firebrand was using Ruskin Sartorius until just before the bubble was destroyed. At some point, you're all going to have to answer for the mistake of hiding your activities inside that habitat. It was a mistake, a bad one, but no one's accusing you of premeditated murder. All I'm interested in is why that habitat had to die. Panoply needs whatever Aurora was scared of, and it needs it now."
At last, a voice emerged from the direction of that bluish glow.
"You have no idea, Dreyfus. No idea at all."
It was a woman's voice. "So, Saavedra, not Chen."
"Then it's up to you to put me right.
Go ahead. I'm ready and waiting."
"We weren't just working with relics," Paula Saavedra said. "We were working with the clockmaker itself."
Dreyfus recalled everything that Jane O'Manier had told him. "The clockmaker doesn't exist anymore."
"Everyone believes that the clockmaker was destroyed," Saavedra said. "But it left relics of itself, souvenirs, like the clocks in the sleep lab, and the thing clamped to Jane, and other things too. We got to study them. We thought they were toys, puzzles,
Vicious little trinkets. Mostly they were, but not the one we opened 9 years ago.
What was it?
The clockmaker had encapsulated itself, squeezed its essence down into one of the relics. Its new panoply was closing in on it 11 years ago, so it survived by tricking us. It compressed itself into a seed and waited for us to find it.
Before Dreyfus could frame an objection, she continued,
"It had to discard much of itself, except a weakening of both its intellectual and physical capabilities. It did so willingly because it knew it had no other option, and also because it knew it could rebuild all that it lost at some point in the future."
Dreyfus pushed himself closer to the flight deck. "And you, we, helped it."
"It was a mistake, but when we reactivated the clockmaker, it was still weak, still ineffectual compared to its former embodiment. Even so, it still nearly won."
"How much of this did Jane know?" Dreyfus asked, beginning to wonder why Lansing Chen wasn't contributing to the conversation.
"She was informed that one of the relics had run amok. She was never told that it was the clockmaker itself that had come back from the grave. It was felt that the news would have been too upsetting."
"But she still closed you down."
"Perhaps she was right. Needless to say, we didn't agree. Although Firebrand had taken grave losses, we felt that we had come closer than ever before to learning something of the clockmaker's true nature. We who survived were convinced that the future security of the Glitterband depended on the discovery of that nature. We had to know what it was, where it had come from, so that we could ensure nothing like it ever emerged again. That was our moral imperative, Prefect Dreyfus, so we decided to remain operational. We were already super black. It took very little effort to submerge ourselves to an even deeper level of secrecy, beyond even Jane's oversight."
"And what did you learn, Paula?"
"Don't come any closer, Prefect Dreyfus."
But Dreyfus was already within view of the flight deck by the time she finished her sentence. The connecting door was open. Blood droplets formed a cloud of little scarlet balloons, pulled into perfect spheres by surface tension. Lansing Chen was dead. He was buckled into the right-hand command seat, his head lolling at an unnatural angle, swaying slowly from side to side as the air shifted. His neck had been gashed open with the whip-hound Paula Saavedra was still holding. She was buckled into the left-hand chair, rotated around to face Dreyfus and Sparva. She had one leg hooked higher than the other. She held the whip-hound in her right hand, while her left hovered above one of the luminous blue controls on the console.
"You didn't have to kill Chen," Dreyfus said, tightening his grip on his own whip-hound.
Behind, he heard Sparva speak into his bracelet. "Get me Mercier. We need a crash team at the nose. This is a medical emergency."
"I didn't want to kill him," Saavedra said with real menace. "Chen was a good man, Prefect. He served Firebrand well until the end. It's not his fault that he's been having doubts."
"What kind of doubts?"
"None of us liked what happened to Ruskin Sartorius, but most of us saw it as an unfortunate but unavoidable occurrence. A casualty of war, Prefect. Not Chen, though. He felt we'd gone too far, that 960 lives were too high a price to pay for security. He felt it was time to blow our cover."
"He'd have been right."
The tip of her whip-hound gleamed dark red. "No, he wouldn't. Nothing matters now more than keeping the clockmaker's new location hidden."
"I agree wholeheartedly. Aurora mustn't learn of the clockmaker's whereabouts, but Panoply needs that information more than ever."
"Ordinarily I might have agreed with you, but Panoply is compromised. Someone's been sniffing around Firebrand for days, probably the same someone who helped arrange the attack on Ruskin Sartorius."
"That was Senior Prefect Gaffney. He's out of the picture now. I took care of that myself, so you can start trusting me."
"Can I really? You've done very well to track us down, Prefect. How do I know you aren't just following up on Gaffney's unfinished business?"
"I am, in a way. I had to find you. Why'd you have to kill Chen, Paula?"
"I told you. He got cold feet at the last moment. Decided he'd rather stay here and face the music. I couldn't let that happen, Prefect, just as I can't let you keep me here now."
"Nothing bad will happen to you,"
Dreyfus said. But if he'd meant it earlier, it was an empty promise now. Nothing could excuse the murder of a fellow prefect.
Even if I killed myself, you'd troll my corpse to get the location of the clockmaker. Therefore I must leave. Can you see my left hand, prefect?
Dreyfus nodded. I guess you're holding it there for a reason.
When I boarded this ship, I brought 4 whip hounds with me. They're set to grenade mode, maximum yield, keyed to this console. Don't go looking for them. They're well hidden.
Whip hounds won't detonate inside Panoply. There's a positional safeguard.
Which I overrode without difficulty.
She shook her head disappointedly.
I'm Firebrand, prefect. Can you imagine the lengths we had to go to maintain our effectiveness and secrecy over the last 9 years? There isn't a trick in the book we don't know.
Don't do it, Paula. We need this bay in one piece.
I won't do it unless you prevent me from leaving. But if you try to prevent me, I won't hesitate. The blast won't do significant damage to Panoply. It might put this bay out of action, true, but it definitely won't leave enough of me for you to troll.
I need to know where the clockmaker is, Dreyfus insisted.
I can't take the risk of telling you. As far as I'm concerned, Panoply is already compromised. Firebrand is the only remaining part of the organization capable of handling things from now on.
If you think I can't be trusted, why did you tell me that the clockmaker's still alive?
I told you nothing Aurora won't already know. Now leave the cutter, prefects.
We'll track you, wherever you go. You're just prolonging the inevitable.
There isn't a ship in Panoply that can be prepared and launched in time to follow me.
She allowed a glint of self-satisfaction to shine through.
I know. I checked. And you won't be able to track me. This cutter is CTC dark. Maybe if there wasn't a band-wide crisis going down, stretching all our resources, you might have a chance. But you don't. So you may as well not even bother. I'm dropping off the map. You won't hear from me again.
You might hear from me, Dreyfus said.
Get off this ship. Then make sure those bay doors are opened. You've got 2 minutes.
Give us Chen's body.
So you can run a post-mortem trawl to find out what he knew about the clockmaker? Nice try.
No, Dreyfus thought, not for that reason at all. He'd never counted on extracting anything useful from the dead, but he was sure Demikov's crash team would welcome some practice at stabilizing a severed head before they had to do it for real. Have it your way, Paula. Dreyfus looked back at Sparva. We're leaving. She may be bluffing about those whip hounds, but we can't take the chance.
Boss, Sparva said quietly, I already have her marked. I can put my own whip hound on her in under a second. Try it, Saavedra said, if you're feeling lucky. You have about 90 seconds now, by the way.
You're making a terrible mistake, Paula, Dreyfus said.
So are you. Get off the ship.
Dreyfus nodded at Sparva, and the two of them retreated back into the docking connector. The airlock closed, isolating the ship. Dreyfus cuffed his bracelet and called through to Tyson, the officer in charge of bay operations. This is Dreyfus. Open the doors. Let her go.
Prefect, we can't afford to lose that cutter, Tyson said.
We lose the bay if we don't lose the cutter. Open the doors.
Tyson didn't need to be told twice. A moment later, the vast jaws of the armored doors began to ease wide, interlocking teeth pulling away from each other, to reveal a sea of false stars and the dark side curve of Yellowstone, cusped by a line of indigo. The launching rack pushed out on pistons, shoving Saavedra's cutter into open space. Engines kicked in, spiking out needle-thin thrust lines. The cutter surged away at maximum burn.
"Can we get another ship out there?" Dreyfus asked.
"Not fast enough to intercept," Tyson said. "We'll track her as best we can, but I can't promise anything."
Through the window of the docking connector, Dreyfus watched Saavedra's ship fall into the sea of stars, followed it by eye until he could no longer distinguish it from the lights of distant habitats.
"It's very, very bad,"
Jane Aumonier's hovering face told Dreyfus and the assembled seniors,
while the solid orrery displayed six red lights amidst a sea of twinkling emerald.
Weevils penetrated and occupied Carousel New Brasilia 9 hours 30 minutes ago. We detected manufactory warm-up 2 hours ago. 18 minutes ago, the doors opened and newly minted weevils began to emerge. Squadron density and flow throughput is consistent with what we've already seen in Aubusson and Schlumper O'Neill. She paused, allowing that to sink in before delivering the grim remainder of her summary. We lost Flammarion not long after Brasilia. The manufactories are online there as well. Based on what we've observed in the other habitats, we can expect weevil output to commence in 10 to 15 minutes. We failed to contain the outflow from Aubusson and Schlumper O'Neill, but we were at least able to reduce the number of weevils, which must have had some measurable effect on Aurora's rate of spread. Now we'll have no chance, short of nuclear intervention at the production sites. Of course, that won't stop any weevils that have already departed.
Which habitats are the new weevils targeting? Asked Clear Mountain.
If there's one crumb of comfort to extract from any of this, Aumonier said, it's that Lillian's simulation appears to accurately predict Aurora's intentions. That may change in the future, if Aurora realizes that we're guessing her movements. But for the moment, it does at least allow us to concentrate our evacuation efforts, where they're most useful. The weevil flow from Brasilia is aimed at the Toriyuma Murchison Spindle, one of the 10 habitats we've already prioritized.
How are we doing, evacuation-wise? Asked Dreyfus, rubbing at his eyes.
If I might, Beaudry began, clutching a compad as if it was the only thing in the universe she could depend on. The Toriyuma Murchison Spindle contained 511,000 citizens. According to the docking staff, we've now processed 460,000, leaving a surplus of
51,000, Dreyfus said, before Beaudry could finish. How long until we get them out?
Local constables report a non-compliance level of 1%. I'm afraid we'll just have to abandon them. We don't have time to argue with people if they really don't want saving. As for those still awaiting transport, our current estimate predicts complete evacuation within 4 hours 20 minutes, assuming we can get the liners in and out without incident.
There's a liner docked now, Dreyfus asked.
Not a high-capacity vehicle. The biggest ship we have on station is the medium-capacity liner High Catherine. She can carry 6,000 at a time, but she takes a long time to load. The larger ship we've been using, the Bellatrix, can take 10,000, but we're also using her to offload people from the persistent vegetative state.
Why are we risking the lives of living citizens to save a bunch of self-induced coma cases? Clear Mountain asked.
Because they are citizens as well, Aumonier snapped. No one gets priority treatment here, not on my watch. It's a moot point in any case, Beaudry said for Clear Mountain's benefit. Even if we reassigned the Bellatrix to deal solely with the evacuees from the Toriyuma Murchison Spindle, we still wouldn't get them all out in time.
Correct, Aumonier said.
Weevil contact is anticipated in 55 minutes 11 seconds. With local constables tasked to assist in the evacuation at the docking hubs, the weevils will have a clear run to the polling core. If events follow the pattern we've already seen, the Toriyuma Murchison Manufactory is scheduled to start weevil production in under 10 hours.
Then the evacuees still have all that time, Dreyfus said. We can get them out.
I'm sorry, Aumonier said, her image looking at him as if no one else was in the room. But what we're dealing with here is akin to a state of plague. So far as we know, Aurora can seize control of habitats by reaching their polling cores. What we don't know is what other capabilities she might have up her sleeve if we give her the chance to try them out. I cannot run the risk of letting her hop from habitat to habitat by another means, and that includes evacuation vehicles.
But Jane...
We keep moving them out until the absolute last moment, she said. But the instant weevils make groundfall on Toriyuma Murchison, I'm pulling out the liners. Just to be absolutely clear to all concerned, she added, even if there are still people in the docking tubes.
And then what? Dreyfus asked.
even though he knew what she was going to say.
"We nuke. We remove one of Aurora's stepping stones.
There'll still be tens of thousands of people inside the spindle. About 35,000, if the Bellatrix can get in and out one more time. But there's no other way, Tom. We'll target the manufactory first, of course. But we'll have to hit so hard to take it out completely that we might as well be attacking the entire habitat. We'll have ships standing by in case, but I'm not expecting survivors."
"There must be another way."
"There is. We could nuke the 6 habitats Aurora already holds, and the 2 she's about to take. That would stop her. But then we'd be talking about killing several million people, not just tens of thousands."
"Taking out that one habitat won't necessarily stop her."
"It'll inconvenience her. I'll settle for that for now."
"This is bigger than Panoply," Dreyfus said desperately. "We need to call in assistance, anyone who has a ship and can help."
"I've issued requests for help through the usual channels. Maybe something will arrive, but I'm not counting on it."
She hesitated, her attention still fixed only on him. Dreyfus had the feeling that he was participating in a private conversation, to the exclusion of everyone else in the room.
"Tom, there's something else."
"What?" he asked.
"I'm going to have to take down polling and abstraction services band-wide. There's just too much danger of Aurora utilizing the network for her own purposes.
She spreads by Weevil."
"The Weevils are her main agents. But we don't know for sure that she isn't using other channels to assist in her spread. I've already received a mandate to use all emergency powers at our disposal. That means authorization to commit mass euthanization if it means saving other lives. It also means I can take down the networks."
"We'll need those networks to coordinate our own efforts."
"And we'll retain skeletal data links for just that purpose. But everything else has to go. It's the only way to be sure."
Dreyfus examined his thoughts. It startled him to realize that he was less shocked by Aumanier's planned use of nuclear weapons than he was by the idea of blacking out the entire glitter band. But the fact of the matter was that for most of the 10,000 habitats, life was continuing more or less as normally. Some of the citizens would be aware of the crisis, but many would be completely insulated from it, snug in the hermetic cocoons of their private fantasy universes. That wouldn't necessarily change when Panoply started nuking, but no one, save the citizens of the Bezeel solipsist state, or the persistent vegetative state, or the harsher voluntary tyrannies, could fail to notice the withdrawal of band-wide data services. Reality was about to give them a cold hard slap in the face, whether they liked it or not. The lights were about to go out across the glitter band. There was no choice. It had to be done.
"Just do one thing for me," Dreyfus said, "before you pull the plug. Tell them Panoply isn't giving up on them. Tell them that we're going to be outside, fighting, and that we won't let them down. Tell them not to forget that."
"I will," she said.